Not bad. Well, welcome to another episode of Lookout Podcast. I got the whole family here, which is awesome. Appreciate you guys coming all the way from... Wait, where did you guys come from this morning?
Mosque. Well, we came from just out of the Powell. We camped on the Locksaw this morning, and...
Well, we drove from Moscow, Idaho.
Drove from Moscow, Idaho? Awesome. Yeah. And, yeah, and then here in Steve I and head up to Paradise right after this, right?
That's the plan. We'll stop and see my aunt and uncle and say hey to them. They live over there somewhere, and we'll say hi to them.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, so I got Kevin Roach and Kelsey Roach.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. And
Lachlan.
Lachlan.
Yep. Named after the Locksaw.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Well, I've never heard that name before. It's a great name.
Yep.
There's thank you.
Yeah. And then got the pup here, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fen Ranger Roach. Yep.
Fen Ranger Roach. Awesome. Mm-hmm. And then, so you guys are teachers, and then in the summer, you guys go up to Corral Hill Lookout?
That's correct. Yep.
Awesome. How long have you guys been doing that?
This will be the fifth summer up at Corral Hill.
Fifth summer. Dang, man. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
In my 20th year of teaching.
20 years of teaching?
Yeah.
Holy, how long have you been fighting fire, then?
I did fire for 17, and then this will be my fifth year of at the tower, so this will be number 22.
Dang, man. That is awesome. Holy cow.
You, like, dedicated your whole life to fighting fires and, like, teaching.
Yep.
Yeah.
Kids and fire, man.
Kids and fire.
Kids and fire. And dogs.
Oh, that's a great balance. Yeah, because that's, you know, that's kind of what I wanted to cover is, like, some fitness stuff, because, like, you still look like you're maintaining a really good fitness level, and... I mean, I don't know about you, but when I first got into fire, like, it felt like the PT was just kind of, I don't know, almost like cookie cutter. It wasn't really, like, preventative. It was just, like, hike, run, and it wasn't really, I don't think we did any really weight training. We could do it on our own, but, and we did a little bit of circuit PT work, I think, you know? I think for, like, shots and jumpers, a little different, but on district, I think it's kind of your same thing, it feels like, wherever I went, you know?
Yeah, district was a little more on your own, and you got what you put into it, and...
Yeah.
Once we got some guys that spent some time on shot crews or smoke jumpers, and then just even myself as a PE teacher, we put in some different things to get a little bit better preventative fitness. The good old saw appreciation days were were a fan favorite, you could say. But yeah, we tried to make it fun, a little bit of ultimate frisbee here and there, and some good bump runs and lots of hiking, but...
Yeah, we had the bump runs, too. Yeah, and
it's pretty nice running along the Selway River, though, for PT. That's if you're going to run, that's a good spot.
Oh, what a cool spot. And, yeah, and being, like, you know, in small communities like you were and like I was in Whitehall, it's super cool because, you know, like, our teachers and, you know, just folks who've had kids on the fire crew are usually out doing some kind of yard work early in the morning when we're PTing and running by, and they're just, like, cheering us on. They're really happy to see us, you know, and I think the community appreciates when they see, like, their fire crew is fit, you know. I think, to me, it's, like, almost a little sense of security, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And, yeah, just knowing that people are there and ready and willing to step out there and capable is a good thing.
Yeah, totally.
He found Mountain Tough last year. Do you know about Mountain Tough?
No, but you kind of told me about it a little bit before, so I'm glad you brought that up.
Yep. Yeah. Yes. So last year I encouraged him to describe to Mountain Tough, which is like, you know, pick up a boulder, go throw it, pick it up again, do it again. What's this boulder teaching you about life? How are you going to overcome your obstacles? So he started incorporating that into his daily routine at the Corral Hill, and then the kids got involved. So now he's yoked.
Yeah.
They've got some good podcasts on there too, and, you know, good dad advice things like that. And just, you know, being your best physically, but also, you know, understanding what you can control and stressful situations
can I get the mental aspect?
Yeah, kind of mastering, like, hey, I've done hard things before. I can do this and continue to do great things, and just appreciating, like, the goal is to be fit for hunting.
Yeah, like life fit.
But, I mean, it would serve anyone that wants to be fit, plus even firefighters. It's great. It's good total body workouts and stability.
Yeah.
For old knees like mine, it's really good. It helps me not be in as much pain when I'm out hiking or carrying something heavy. So
yeah, and to tack on that a little bit too, like, I notice in my back, like, I've never injured my back, I have no, like, real back issues, but, like, I notice if I haven't been working out, especially doing any kind of core exercises, I start feeling real bad in my lower back, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I'm like been neglecting my core, you know, like my abs haven't got any work, because you don't really do much with your abs, like just walking around and stuff. So it's like you really got to put in the time, and I learned that in college track, because I started having some real back issues in college track, and that's what it was. It was my back muscles were overcompensating for my abs being weaker, and so I had to figure out the balance, and had the same thing with my hamstrings and my quads too when I was running.
Yeah, and I think that was probably where I was having some knee problems. I tore my ACL, and then part of the getting back in shape and getting older, there was not the balance between my quads and my hamstrings, and it was bugging me. Well, and I was 25 pounds overweight too, but losing that weight made a lot of difference than just getting back where I wanted to be, and feel pretty good now.
Yeah, totally. I think that happens to a lot of fire folks too. Really get out of it. You know, you burn so many calories throughout the summer, and you know, it kind of helps you like stay even like skinny during the winter a little bit too. And yeah, I think you just kind of keep the momentum through the winter typically, and you get ready for the fire season again in the spring. And so you don't really have time to put on any pounds, but then like once you get away from the fire season stuff and start, you know, doing more life things and not moving as much, you know, like the older you get, even the forcer, the more you get like, you know, chained to the computer and less out and active in the woods, you know, so. You know, it catches up with you. I know I felt it a little bit in my career too, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I notice it at school if I'm giving the kids too much work and I'm having to grade it all.
Yeah.
I don't like being in front of the computer, so I try to limit that as much as I can.
Yeah, man. And you learn more through like activity and stuff too, right? So, yeah. And your PE, right?
PE and health.
And health.
Yeah, we try to maximize more learning by doing instead of just chained to a desk, because that's not the answer.
This last whole week, it was ultimate frisbee week, because the year like winds down, it's more like let's go outside.
Yeah.
And in PE we were doing I'm an aide for one of his kids, and in PE we were doing kickball, and one of the kids came up to me, they're like, how do you keep up with him? I'm like, what, Roach? And he's like, he has so much energy all the time. What is he, like 40? I'm like, he's gonna be 43. He's like, am I going to be like this when I'm 43? I'm like, if you keep doing the things. And he's like, oh, doing things. But yeah, you'll see him outside like playing ultimate frisbee. And like, he's like, you know, he's like, ultimate. And he's throwing and he's like knocking stuff down out of the air. And the kids are like, come on, Mr. Roach. And
take it easy.
Like, exactly. He's just like, go, baby, go. It's fun.
Oh, that's so awesome. But yeah, kind of what you said. I remember someone told me that a long time ago. It was like a body in motion stays in motion. You always hear it from like physics or whatever. But like with humans, it's same thing, you know. And you can see like probably in like family and friends that are aging. And you can see like once they stop, like my great grandpa was, I think he was 97 when he passed, but I think he lost his license at 92, like his eyesight just couldn't keep up. But I mean, he was active his whole life and never was overweight, you know. And
yeah, makes a big difference. I've had my great grandma lived to be 101, and my grandma, she's still alive, and she's 96 and still
still
tell
kicking,
him, still going.
Yeah. Tell him how much she was lifting when you went to go visit her, your great grandma.
She gets weights.
One of the last times I remember visiting her, she's got her like pound and a half or 2 pound dumbbells, and she's doing her dumbbell curls, just getting those.
That's awesome.
Keeping it going, and that was just the way she was. She was out in the garden all the time, and you know, connected in that way, living on a farm. And you know, that's where you got your food, you got your exercise, and your time outside's kind of invaluable to your overall well-being. And I think she's living proof of it.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, my great grandpa's kind of the same one. He's the one who actually bought this brand new in Missoula back in the day. And yeah, and the reason why it's a single axle is because he had like a little wheel that you could attach to the jack. So if like he got in a spot that was a dead end in a bad way,
he could put
the wheel on and turn it around by hand, which is the thing, is still like 3,000 pounds.
Oh yeah, so this
like,
isn't light.
But yeah, he was a pretty big boy, so and he probably had like some straps and you know other things he was using. But I was like, geez, man,
get a come along and a
that's what
in the snatch block, he can move it around pretty easy.
Yeah, figure it out. Yeah, and he had a bunch of boards and stuff, so yeah, he'd figure it out and yeah, get it out of holes. And it, I think at the time too, getting the clearance, like Airstream had one of the higher clearances, so like you get up in the backwoods and figure it out that way. Kelsey, how long were you up in the lookout then, or how long have you, all 5 years?
We started dating in 2020, and that's when he got the job, because he was like, what better way to escape a pandemic than go out and drink coffee and pick huckleberries. I'm like, you should freaking do it.
Yeah.
He's like, you're okay with me being gone for 3 months of the year? I'm like, please go. I'll visit you.
Yeah, so I'll find you.
I'll find you. Yeah. So for all the years that he's been up there, I've made sure to go up every other weekend or so too. So
I've always liked lookout towers,
but you know, never actually had the chance to really go up there, and then started dating him and it all worked out.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. When I think you had a post I saw like a long time ago, or maybe we were just talking through text, and it was like, what better way to still be able to be in fire but spend time with my family and then have my family out in the woods all the time?
Yeah, it was the best career move I've ever made, where, you know, I'm at my job and just getting to be a dad. We're out there, you know, whether they're building forts, riding the four-wheeler, picking huckleberries, just hanging out and enjoying the scenery, because it's one of those things. Each day's very different at times, and we can we're looking down on the Camas Prairie on the kind of northwestern side of the tower, so you just see the progression of, you know, everything getting ready for harvest, and and you can watch that, you know, the different changes there from cutting bluegrass, and then they start burning those fields and then harvesting the wheat. And we see it, you know, like now looking out the airstream, you see the snow. And when we get out there, you know, there's still a lot of snow in the high country, and we just progressively watch it continue to recede as the summer goes. And it's just awesome, the change, you know, from when we go back up Labor Day weekend and close everything up and lock it up. And then to see, you know, now that fall is starting to set in and the cooler temperatures and shorter days, it's pretty awesome to see it from start to the end of the season.
And all the color changes too, because the huckleberries typically turn red, right? The huckleberry leaf?
Yeah, the huckleberries are popping. By then, I wore... My parents make these for us each Christmas. And Kelsey took this picture.
Oh, yeah, that was on the Firefighter Lookout Association. Yeah. That was September's picture.
Really? Calendar for 2022, Kelsey took this picture as the huckleberry brush was popping. And
was that like your first or second year there?
That was the second year,
yeah. Yeah, so cool.
Yep.
We got that picture framed in the living room.
Yeah. I ripped it out of the calendar when we were all done. He was like, you got to sign it. And I said, okay. So he signed it.
Oh, that's a great photo. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And like for me too, like I didn't really like pay attention to it curing out and turning red, you know, like in the fall, it's just kind of like, you know, I'm out there and just like, oh, yeah, huckleberry bush there, you know. And then going up the West Fork, where you guys going today, like there's kind of like that open area when you first turn off the West Fork, it's along the river, and then all of a sudden it opens up into this little canyon like, and then you look like you're driving like into the mountain, and then there's like an open an open spot on the mountain side that you're looking right in front of you, like a fjord or something. Yeah, I don't know exactly what that is, but I like the word.
There you go. It's Irish.
Probably an old avalanche slide.
Yeah, I bet that's what it is. Yeah, and I was trying to think of like a meadow or something, but yeah, it's all huckleberry bushes. But you can't really tell, you know, because it's green during the normal year. And then me and my wife were heading up Medicine Point Lookout, and we took the wrong turn, and we're heading up like Pickett or something, because we were, you know, I can't remember if I had like an old map or something, but there used to be like a way to get to Medicine Point, and you'd have to like bushwhack a little bit, but it's not the actual trail. But we went that way. It was great because it was in the fall and everything was changing colors, and that whole like avalanche slope was just bright red. And I was like, holy cow, that's all huckleberries that way. It's like,
well, in the mountain ash bushes too, once the berries get ripe and those leaves start to turn too, it's pretty awesome.
It's awesome.
Fall's a good time.
It is a good time. Because I think, you know, a lot of people back east, especially like in the Maine country and stuff, like they have the beautiful leaves and they kind of claim to have the prettier falls. But I'd say, like, man, you get in the right spot around here in the Northwest, it'd be right there with it, I think. We just don't have the big trees. Ours are more like bushes and larch.
Yep, that's for sure.
Yeah. Do you guys have larch back your way?
Yeah, we do. There's, you know, as you're going over the pass and you drop onto the Locksaw there and you get to Powell, there's lots of larch in that area. They're just outside of Moscow. He calls it his favorite woods. There's some public land that's kind of in a land trust. There's part of the Palouse Land Trust, but
it's called Idler's Rest.
It's got some big cedar trees and big tamarack in the same little area. So you got these cedars that, you know, they're, you know, 2.5 to 3 feet in diameter. You know, nothing super big, but
yeah,
still impressive. And then you got these pushing 180 foot tall tamaracks that are shooting up through the canopy
so cool,
in there.
Dude.
So it's one of very few places on the earth that has a cedar and tamarack in a situation like that.
Yeah,
so.
Like two of my favorite trees in the Northwest. They're so cool looking. You know, we were just up at Ross Cedars last weekend or the weekend before. You know, they got the giant cedars up that way. And then you guys went through Grove. Did you guys see the sign?
Yeah, the DeVoto. Yeah, we walked through it this morning. Yeah.
Oh, it's cool, right?
They'd never been to it before, so we took a little side. We parked and we ran through there this morning. And
that's cool.
Yeah, when I saw your story, I was like, how far away is that from, I think I call it Smithville. I meant Stevensville. And you're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I was like, Kevin, cedar trees. And he's like, oh, I know the perfect place.
Yeah, DeVoto Grove. Yeah, I would say it's right there with it. A lot of people like Ross's, it's Ross's Cedars.
Yeah, that's where you were. Ross that Creek I was like, cedars. Where is it?
Yeah, it's up going towards like Libby Troy. So
okay. Mm-hmm. There's a, when I taught up in the Silver Valley, there's one, kind of where, on the way, like where Cat and Billy have their little museum there at the Sprague Pole, out of Pritchard, there's a cedar grove up there that's pretty impressive as well.
Oh yeah, like check awesome. That out. It's so cool, man. Yeah, my little kiddo, she's only like a little over 2 years old now, and my brother just popped in like a cat hole, like a tiny little hole in the cedar that was dead, but they get that heart rot and they just like really mm-hmm. open up in the center. My brother like dives in there. And then my daughter was not very big. She just right in there. And even his own kids were like a little like, I don't know about that. And my little kiddo just like, don't care. And then I'm trying to squeeze myself in there. My brother's a little bit shorter and I am a little bit thinner. And he goes in and I'm like trying to squeeze myself in there to go after my own kid. I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah, we just went in one too. And Lachlan's like, oh, there's a lot of mosquitoes in here. I'm like, it's time to get up.
Yeah.
It was just warming up enough.
Just like, let's run for our lives.
Yeah. We broke the temperature barrier where it was warming up enough for the bugs to come out to harass us. So.
Yeah, dang it, man. Yep.
Have you ever seen a yew-wood grove before, Luke?
No.
Oh,
what is that?
Oh, my goodness. So the yew-wood tree, there's a little grove that Kevin showed me. It's off of the, what side of the Corral Hill is it, maybe?
It's just east of Corral Hill.
Okay.
By this little...
what's yew-wood?
It's a tree that the natives used to use to make their bows. It's really bendy, and it's kind of blackish red wood. It's
the wood's really beautiful, but it is a very slow-growing tree. Usually never gets very tall. Moose love it for browse, like in the wintertime and stuff. But, some of those trees, they might not only be, 8-10 inches across the stump, but they'll be pushing 300 years old. They grow super slow and just really dense. But then the wood, it's almost got a purplish reddish tint to the interior of it. It's beautiful and it's hard. If you cut very much of that with chainsaw, you're sharpening a lot. It's some dense stuff.
Like being down in the South when you got to cut all the hardwoods.
Yeah, if you're in the juniper and the PJ, it's like that. It's super hard stuff.
But the orchard he took me to, or the grove that he took me to, I think it dated back to 600 to 700 years ago.
Yeah,
but it was so quiet and so primitive. Like it was like a kind of a spiritual experience. It's just so dark and so beautiful, and everything is just like really old and ancient and very green. It's really pretty.
That's awesome.
No, it was the, do you remember the yew-wood? Remember when you fell off that little cement thing and you kind of got a scratch all over your body? Remember that? No? Blocked it out? Anyway.
Blocked it out.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
That was a bad event. I don't remember anything about it.
It was a close call.
Yeah, we got it.
A few Band-Aids. It could have been more, but it was... More adventure.
Yeah, more adventure. Oh, yeah. Man. Yep. Does anyone make any furniture or anything like kind of decorative out of that yew-wood?
Oh, actually, he and his brother, they accidentally fought over a yew-wood tree during a fire. Tell them about that.
Oh, really?
Tell them about when you found the yew.
Oh, we were cutting a contingent line on the Johnson Bar fire, and a yew-wood tree was one that ended up getting cut down.
Oh.
Wasn't supposed to get cut down, but someone didn't know what their tree species was and got a little excited with the saw, and one ended up getting cut down, and we rolled it down to the road to come back to get at a later date. And my brother was on that fire and ended up finding it and found it before we could come back.
Rescued it.
He told Kevin, he's like, I found the best piece of yew wood. He's like, that's my tree.
Wait, whereabouts did you find this wood?
Exactly. Anyway, it's in good hands.
Yeah, it's cool, man. Is it like workable wood? Like you can make something kind of cool out of it if you wanted?
Yeah, I think if a guy knew what he was doing, it would be a lot of a lot of chiseling and a lot of sanding and a lot of work, but
yeah,
you could make some beautiful stuff out of that, I think.
Oh, cool. Yeah. The reason why I was asking is because my brother, when he first, like, he got like a, it's not like manufactured, but it's like a pre-built, but it's a stick built though. So like when it comes, it's not like a, you know, like a double wide is like a manufactured mobile mm-hmm. home. His is like an actual, like, stick built, and then they put together on the job on your foundation or whatever. Mm-hmm. And but he specifically had him not like put a mantle and a railing and something else because he wanted to
do it himself.
Yeah, nice. And he would tamarack, and so me and him went up Highway 12, found a couple dead ones, and brought them home, and he hewed them at my house. And man, I mean, the color of that wood is amazing.
Yeah, that has some good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So imagine the density of tamarack, but then
up it
even more. Like that's a you wood tree.
I bet I can only picture, because like my brother, who is a pretty stout fella, he's a bullfighter, and yeah, like so you know, played football and rugby with me and stuff, and you know, like just a really good athlete. And then my younger brother-in-law, who also played college basketball athlete, he's like 6'3" or something, I think, you know, good sized fella, and took all three of us
to wrestle it around.
Yeah, to get that log up and into the flatbed of my truck, and holy cow, man.
Yeah, tamarack's some heavy wood, even when it's dead.
Yeah, exactly. This thing was like a, you know, it was a standing dead, so it was dried out. It wasn't like taking up any of the moisture off the ground, you know, like none of the groundwater, but holy cow. Like it was hard, man. We got it in the truck, and I think we ended up like got three decent rounds off of that one, or two trees maybe, and luckily that's, you know, it was workable for him, but holy cow, man, like, we were spent just three logs, you know, and I come from lodgepole country, where lodgepole's super light.
That's easy to manage compared to tamarack.
Yeah, I can get a whole, you know, trailer and truckload of firewood by myself, and, you know, I'm a little wore out, but it's not like killing myself, you know, you get a bunch of tamarack, holy cow.
Yeah, you got to split it in half before you can consider loading it.
Yeah, exactly. That's a smart way to do it. Holy cow. Man, yeah, some of the old boys get firewood around here and even around Whitehall. Like, they split it all and put it in the truck. Like, I don't want to be up in the mountains that long, you know?
Yeah, I don't like to hold or handle that many pieces.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather get it home whole or in half at worst, just so you have less pieces to move when you get home.
That's awesome.
It's way easier to unload when you're just throwing rounds out.
Yeah, a little big flatbed, you know, with the stake sides on, and they'll have it all split and stacked up in there nice, and a lot of them aren't selling it, they're just bringing it home like that. And it's like, man, that's a lot of work right there on the side of the road, too.
Well, and when I was, well, probably even younger than him, my dad and his cousins, they'd take the farm truck out, you know, same thing, and I mean, that's probably 2.5 or 3 cords of wood, but
on site.
You made your trip worth it when you haul it out of the woods that way.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I remember days. I mean, yeah, it was an all day thing to get that much wood split and stacked and loaded.
Man, yeah, that's a lot, man.
It's a long day.
Yeah, but it's a cord 4 feet by 8 feet or something like that. Is that what a cord is, I think?
Yep.
Somewhere around those dimensions.
Yep, 4 by 4 by 8.
Yeah.
Oh, you're fine.
It's all right, buddy. Oh, I keep hearing some kind of squeaky door around us. Your good ears, boy. I don't know where it's coming from. Is there like a camper on the other side of that? Are you hearing that squeaky door?
I hear something.
No, I don't know.
It's probably just a car or the
maybe wind. It's the Airstream. Which is
it could be a lot of things.
It's a ghost in the Airstream.
Yeah, for sure. So how much longer do you guys think we'll be doing the Corral Hill?
30 years, I'd say.
You got 30 more in you?
Yeah, his daughter has dibs when he can finally retire from it. So
there you go, mm-hmm. Man. Pass it down.
I think she's eyeing a career in the woods of some kind. She hasn't quite decided yet, but she likes.
It'll probably be really, really old by then.
But it's sturdy.
It's sturdy. Yeah, exactly.
I could shake the top of the lookout.
Shake it all you want. That's what it's made for.
Yeah.
It's been there for 60 years.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Well, no, 53 was when it was built. No, it's 71. Last year was its birthday.
Dang, that's awesome.
The 70th.
Yeah, the Deer Mountain, I think, was 100 years of service last year. That's down here in the Sapphires.
Nice.
Do you guys know Deer Mountain?
Mm-mm.
If you guys do like a tour in the Bitterroot, but just like this valley, and then not counting the West Fork part, I'd say Deer Mountain's probably like the best view. St. Mary's is really nice. It's a great view, but it can be super windy up there sometimes. And I don't know, something about Deer Mountain. It's in the Sapphires, but it's like kind of out. So you'll actually drive by it today. It'll be off your left side, right after you make the turn to Connor. You can kind of see it. It's tough. You kind of have to know, like, if you get a map.
Know when to look. Okay.
Yeah, you can kind of see a little box on the hill. Like, you guys know what to look for, but just the way it comes out on like a little peninsula, you can see like into Lake Como and like into these valleys and in the bitters that are super cool, man.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, it's like the bitters like in your face. We're like, you know what it is, like if you're in the bitter like on St. Mary's, you're up on top of the world, but you're looking down the sapphires in the valley. It's a cool view, but I don't know, to me it looks a little better when you're looking into the Bitterroots, you know, like you get that view and then the sunset into the Bitterroots too, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we first get up to the tower, we can see quite a bit of country in June when the air is good and clear.
Oh, yeah.
And we can see Moscow Mountain, so just right outside of where we live. We can see the mountains out of... the Whitecap Wilderness Mountains there out of Wallowa, Seven Devils, Gospel Hump.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's not like Riggins, right? Seven Devils?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I'm pretty sure it's El Capitan. I haven't been able to quite confirm it, but
yeah.
if it's a really good visibility day with spotting scope, I can see a very large mountain, and my best guess is it's El Capitan on this side. So
yeah, I bet it is, man, because it, you know, even like when you get deep in the sapphires, you can see El Cap pretty clear. It just seems to like, it just doesn't have like a lot of things like obstructing its view, you know. It's
yeah,
cut out by itself a little bit, you know.
And Gardner Peak Lookout, which is it's on the Bitterroot Forest, but down the river trail there from Paradise. I've been up there a couple times, and
really?
it's got some pretty good views looking right into El Capitan and Trapper and
cool.
Some of that. It's a pretty cool place too.
Yeah, I was really curious about Gardner because it's on us, but like Idaho uses it. You guys use it.
Yeah, it's on our district, but it's right on the, it's part of Moose Creek, but it's you got to go through the Bitterroot. The easiest way to get to it is from this side.
Yeah, go up, like they park at Paradise right and hike in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I heard one lookout was floating down to it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, in the beginning of the season, then would hike out at the end.
Yeah, Lisa, who staffs it now, she used to be the river ranger for us at Fenn, so that was her job, was patrolling the wilderness stretch and making sure, you know, everyone had their permits and were cleaning up after themselves. And I got to go on a trip with her.
Really?
1 year to start the summer, and that was a good way to start the summer. I met up with her in Lolo, and we got our groceries right here.
Oh, really?
And headed over the mountain, aired up the boats, and headed down the river. It was awesome.
Oh, man, what a great way to start the year, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
His kids all have, like, little mirrors to flash Tom on cool water. So on a really good day, too, like, he'll text Tom, be like, okay, look towards us, and, like, we'll flash each other.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah, and that's, like, something so simple like that is so cool. Like, So that year when I went up to Medicine Point, I actually proposed to my wife up there, and everything was done but Deer Mountain. It was kind of a late fire season, so all the lookouts I think were done except for Deer. I think even Willow, which is like right up here, was done. Do you guys know Tanner Fruit up Willow?
Uh-uh.
I'll have to show you guys his stuff because he's got it set up as like a sound studio.
Oh, nice.
Super cool. So I'll tell you about that in a second. But we were up in Medicine, and I brought a radio with me because I knew Ellie, and I'd call Ellie to give her a heads up, like, hey, we're going to be up on Medicine Point. You know, like, I'll hit you up, and I'll give you a mirror flash when we get up there. And she flashes back. And, you know, it's cool because especially they have the Allidade still in there, you know, the Firefinder. So, I can cue right in on where Deer Mountain is exactly. And I already kind of knew, but it, you know, helped my wife to look at it. And then mirror flash, you know, mm-hmm. You can't miss it, and it's like, oh, yep, there she is right there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a weird little thrill that you get. It's so primitive, but at the same time you feel so connected, you know?
Yeah, it's like a little connection for sure. Yep. It's so cool.
It's like a really long telephone, like, you know, with a can, but like, you know, with sunshine.
Totally. Yeah, it's super cool. But yeah, Tanner Fruit's up here in Willow Mountain. He's been up there for a while, and there's actually a fella who inspired him that's over by you guys somewhere. Plays guitar. I think we talked about him before. Maybe I talked to you about him before.
Oh, yeah. And up in Coeur d'Alene or Sandpoint area?
No, he's up Highway 12, I think.
Okay.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. He's been up there for a long time. Played like really good musician. Plays guitar, I want to say.
Was it Tom? Coolwater Tom?
Maybe it was Tom.
He does play guitar.
Is he good? Is he really good at guitar?
I don't know. I've never heard him play. But I know he does play. He makes great cookies, though.
Does he really? Oh, yeah. There's some musician in I want to say... maybe I didn't release this podcast yet, but my friend Danny Atkinson like was hiking him in one time, and there's like, I think he said there's like seven or more switchbacks up to it.
Mm-hmm. Or are you talking Oregon Butte?
Oh, maybe that could be it. But he's I think he's working on a pile, so he helped hike him in.
Okay, could be Diablo or Bear Mountain.
Oh, I bet it's Diablo, I think. That seems right.
Okay.
But he, like, you know, this guy's a character and plays music. And so on the way up, they're hiking and stuff in with him. And he's a little bit behind, but close enough they can hear him. And every switchback, he'd be like, one, he's like, by the time we hit five, I was over that, man.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
It was great, yeah. It's like, what a good dude. And then later on that summer, they got a fire right underneath him. He said he serenaded him all night playing music, and he said it was awesome.
That's nice. Great.
Yeah, I was like, oh, man. I mean, those kind of things, you can't get anywhere else, man. Mm-hmm. Like, one-a-lifetime kind of deal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Especially how rare fire is, and, like, the chances of you being there, you know, next to his, like, any lookout, but next to his, and he's going to play music, you know? Mm-hmm. It's so cool.
Yep. Kevin wanted to learn to play guitar, and so he mentioned that to my dad the first year he was going to be up there. And so for my dad's, or for Kevin's birthday, which is May 31st, by the way, my dad got him just like a little podunk guitar on Facebook. He's like, now you can learn to play. He's like, no excuses, go for it. So
go.
Yeah, then he learned to play up on the lookout.
Yeah, it's behind strumming? The couch.
Been trying. Yeah. I've noticed I've lost a lot of dexterity in my fingers over the years of various injuries and smashing them. So
yeah.
It's a little more challenging, but.
Yeah, and I think it's like a thing that you kind of lose. You got to retrain those muscles because, you know, I used to play like a little bit of like pep band and stuff in high school and just strum every once in a while and I'll kind of like lose it, you know.
Were you a trumpet player or guitar?
No, guitar. I had a bass and I just use it as an excuse to go to like the basketball games. Like, I'll come and play Smoke on the Water.
Yeah.
One of the simplest things to play, you know, in the school had a bass. So I just pick it up and come and, I don't know, give a little extra sound to the band, I guess.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, but I noticed, like, if I pick up a guitar now, I feel like, you know, my left hand just doesn't know what to do, and not that I was ever great, but it's, you know, it's like training those fingers again to be where you want them to be.
Yep. Yeah, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah. But, yeah, back to Tanner, though. He, you know, he's in the summer, he'll live stream out of the, he's got his own Starlink.
Yeah,
he put it on top, and so he'll live stream out of the Willow Mountain Lookout. And it's so cool, yeah.
That's
and
awesome.
It says the sunsets, usually as the sun's going down, and he plays, he's really good on the sax, and he plays like with a lot of bands around here, like with some bigger, he's got a big one coming up, the Wilma in Missoula here soon, or maybe already missed it, but either way, and he's got like sound tables and all kinds of different instruments, and like he'll have like a friend come up, like he had this gal come up and sing in there with him last year, and it's cool, because like a lot of times I'll be on my drive home from work, and I'll just like, put it on, and he's, you know, you got great music, and then you got a little video going on, and he's got some lights going. It's super
nice.
Cool.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
But that was kind of the inspiration for this, is because I was injured. I had a tumor, and I couldn't do anything. Like, I probably really wasn't supposed to even be driving, because, like, it my blood pressure would spike so much that it would, you know, I'd get a little lightheaded and stuff. So they didn't know what to do with me. So, like, a lot of times I'd just be out patrolling by myself and just trying not to get too crazy active. So I go up and hang out with him a lot, and I was up there, and I'd already thought about, like, doing a podcast myself, and oh, there's something else I was like thinking about, and I was like, dude, you need a podcast, man. Like, look at this, you already got set up, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, no interest. And I was like, that's kind of the name became Lookout Podcast, because I was up in this lookout, in Willow Mountain Lookout, just like,
nice.
Man, this would be kind of cool. And then I didn't really want it to be like Smoke Jumper Podcast, because it just feels like then it's like Smoke Jumper and nothing but that. And I'm sure there'd be some guys like,
oh, Smoke Jumpers.
The Jumper Bros.
Lookout Podcast is a better name than Smoke Jumper Podcast. It's just too long.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
But he's got both in the logo, though.
I got the little jumper there.
Mm-hmm. It's covering all the bases. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, and now they don't even jump that parachute anymore. That's the round there. No, now it's all squares.
Every now and then the Air Force will buzz the tower. Like,
oh, really?
Did they do it last year, too, Kevin?
Well, they didn't last year because they had the temporary TFR because of that fire between us and Pilot Knob, so they didn't buzz us. But yeah, there'll be a F-15 or two. I mean, they'll be below us, and we're really not even that high, but they'll scoot through the saddle between us and Pilot Knob.
Man.
Just cooking.
Yeah. But I wonder how many of them are like permission to buzz the tower.
Yeah.
Like, how many of these boys are living out the Top Gun life?
Yeah, absolutely.
and it's pretty awesome. You hear them coming, and I've got a video of a couple of them, and you know, they'll get through the probably the most dangerous spot, right through the saddle, and then as they're before they get like to Grangeville and Camas Prairie, you'll just see them kind of doing barrel rolls and
really?
Messing around and having a good time.
Dream.
Yeah,
I wonder if they
really cool to watch. watch them. They must really, really practice really for a really long time.
Yeah, I bet.
Just like another hand form, I think.
Yep.
Why don't you tell them about the retardant drops that we could watch
on the fire last year?
It was really cool because I spotted the fire. Wait, did I?
Yeah, you did your first day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I spotted the fire and it was like a week of like them dropping retardant in water. It was super cool.
Yeah. Just painting the mountainside, huh?
Yeah,
helicopters and tankers, and then they had the scoop planes too. They were flying over to Dorshak Reservoir and loading up and flying back. So yeah, we had quite the air show.
That's really cool. What a great experience. There's not too many fellows your age that are getting to see something like that, man.
Yeah.
I'm pretty lucky.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can find some mushrooms over there when we get up there in Morales. 2 weeks.
Yeah, Morales should be popping.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that's super cool about where we live is like the seasonal stuff that you're kind of talking about in the beginning. Is like we got the Morales in the beginning of the season. There's a little bit of a lag. Then the huckleberries start popping and it's super cool.
Yeah, and the fishing, the salmon are running. There's a lot of people heading.
Steelhead.
Most of them are below Kamiai right now, but there's a lot of fishermen that are out there trying to catch some fish too. So yeah, and he caught a pretty good smallmouth last year.
It made a really good lunch. It was delicious.
Yeah, tell them how you did. You put it up. Like, what'd you put on it?
Well, yeah.
We cooked it with like put pepper on it, and then we put it in like it was raw, and then we put like vinegar,
lime juice and salt.
Lime juice and salt, and it was delicious.
Yeah, like
we cured it like ceviche,
I forgot what I was going to say.
It happens
to me all the time.
No, not embarrassing at all. The mic will do it to you, man. It'll kind of take your memory from you a little bit.
Yep.
Man, that ceviche is good, though. Some of your age eating ceviche, man, that's big, because I didn't eat it until I was, like, almost 30.
Yeah, me too. So, he's all about that.
Mm-hmm. Man. The daughters just, like, drink the tomato juice. Like his youngest daughter Kalia, she'll be like, can I have some ceviche? I'm like, do you want ceviche or do you want the juice that comes in? She's like, the juice. And I'm like, all right,
there you go.
Like, eat some of the protein. She's like, fine.
I like to do the chips, and like I just tried the shrimp in there and it's good with like get like the juice and then shrimp on it, and it's delicious shrimp on a chip. Yeah, it's so good.
Such a good combo.
We kind of started a little September tradition. We meet a couple other friends and we go up to Selway Falls, and we call it grouse camp now, but we go out kind of scouting for deer and elk, but looking for grouse and
grouse is so good.
Really good. Really good fishing too in September. The trout are pretty hard not to catch that time of year. So
beauty.
We enjoy the fall colors and a little bit of hunting too. So
Oh, that's awesome, man. Like it. The older I get, the more like excuses I'm trying to find to get out in the woods. You know, even like just like you guys going to paradise. You know, if we didn't have the new kiddo, we'd be following you guys down there today. You know, and
next year.
That's what I was gonna say. Next year, as long as the invite's still there.
It's become the Memorial Day tradition for us. The last
we don't really
3 years, I think we've done.
We don't
it.
Really cool. need excuses to go out to the woods, and
we just do it.
Because it's like your job, and
it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say again.
That's
all right, man. Living the outdoor dream. Yeah, and for me, it's like, getting the Smith River permit I pulled a couple years ago. And then, you know, like just like an event like this, going to meet you guys in paradise, you know, and just having stuff on a calendar to go for, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the school, he actually he had this idea for an outdoor, like it's like an elective basically, but he's using two of Steve Rinella's books. What's it called? Indoor Kids and Outside Kids in an Indoor World. And then did I reverse that?
I think you reversed.
Okay. Yeah. And what was the other one? Something about crawfish.
Catch a crayfish, count the stars.
Yeah. And so
awesome, man. Great titles.
Yeah. So all these books about like Steve Rinella of Meat Eater. He makes sure that his kids are outside all the time, no matter what, rain, shine, all that stuff. And so reading these books, I got them for Kevin's birthday or Christmas or something, I don't remember what, but they resonated with him so well that he started to implement it in with his children, and that's resonating so well with them. He kind of like just like told our boss, and he's like, what if I made this like outdoor class that I get to take kids, like, you know, maybe to Idler's Rest, or we go to Hordman's Pond and like watch the ecosystem. And she's like, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So the board is looking over it right now. But yeah, he's going to have those two books and just like tell kids, like, we were meant to be outside.
Totally.
It's going to be okay. Let's go do it.
Yeah. Maybe you should start like an outdoor club, like maybe like do like stuff in the field and stuff. Maybe sometimes every other Friday I can join or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, you can hang out with the eighth graders. Yeah. They'll be fine.
Outdoor clubs every Tuesday during both lunches.
Mm-hmm.
Moscow Middle School.
And maybe there you after go. School on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can join in or something.
We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
I got pretty lucky because like my fourth grade teacher was all about it. He was his name was Mr. Tomei, and he was just about getting connected with nature, and I felt like my brain worked better because I was one of those ADD hyper kids that like if I was in a classroom all day I was not catching a lot that I was getting taught, you know. Yeah. And yeah, totally, man. Yeah, you're not alone there. And then even in high school with our biology class, we did like pond water studies, and then we were out messing with weevils and knapweed, and like, and that stuff we're, you know, still the foresters and everybody's still doing today with like knapweed controls with the weevils. So it was cool to be part of that in my sophomore year of high school, you know.
We got to do quite a bit of stuff down at the fish hatchery at Dorshack.
Oh, cool.
With the fishing game and stuff in biology too, and at Kamiah High, we had a really good teacher teaching that. That was good.
That's huge.
Yeah, but it's interesting you say that, like, that you were a kid that just couldn't sit still in class. There's a reel going around Instagram, I'm sure you've seen it, where it's like, when you take, like, you know, the quote-unquote, like, you know, hard kids, and you take them out into nature, they're like the automatic leaders. And so the kids that are having a hard time sitting still and stuff, once you take them out into nature, like, their brain just, like, comes alive. So
yeah,
you're made for it. Yeah,
well, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That's kind of what happens to me. Like, I love going out, and it was so fun. Like, last Friday, I went on a field trip to Kamiah Butte, and it was so fun. Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
Were you the one leading the adventures? We're like, come on, kids, let's go this way. Were you in the front of the group or in the middle?
Me and Teague were like Addie and Ellie started the group, and then me and Teague kind of went up in the front, and then we were the first to get up at the top.
Nice.
And then the first in Miss Quayler's class to get on the bottom.
Awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
Making leaders out of all of us. Nice work, man.
Yeah, totally. They're just supposed to be meant to be outside. I mean, there's so many things. Like, I heard a quote not too long ago that was, because I was talking to somebody about me being a hands-on leader, hands-on learner, like everybody is. Like, because remember when we were growing up, there was that thing. There was like, you got your hands-on learners, and then you got your people who, you know, you can just kind of tell them, or what's the other learner?
Auditory or visual, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, everybody's hands-on, like, you know, where what they tell you. And this was, like, kind of an older fellow that was telling me this, and I was like, I think you're right, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. And having taught a while, doing it is way more powerful than talking about it or watching someone else do it.
Yeah, sure. Totally. And I think that's why I struggle with, like, math in high school and stuff is because, it'd be written on the board, you know, and, like, someone would go, you know, like, our teacher would be doing all the equations all, you know, through the whole period on the board, and none of us would be getting up and trying them. And then at the end, you know, you get your assignment, like, do the similar things that I did all class period. It's like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't remember any of that, you know, because I wasn't doing it. If I was up there doing it, then it's getting loaded in my brain as I'm doing it. And then whatever I'm going to be hung up on later on at home when I don't have someone to ask, it's like I'll get hung up on it with the teacher there and be able to help guide me through, like, whatever it might be, you know. Mm-hmm. Forgot to step in the equation, you know.
They're teaching math a little bit different now than we were taught. Like, you know, we were just taught, like, you know, you learn your multiplication by memorizing and then you'll figure it out later.
Yeah.
Now with math, the way it is they try to take kids through the step-by-step process, and it takes like two pieces of paper to do one math problem that's really complex. And teaching middle schoolers this new version of math, like, I'm old school. I was like, you know, in middle school in like 2000, so they're like, Miss Kelsey, do you need some help? I'm like, I remember the Pythagorean theorem, but I don't remember it like this.
Yeah.
They're like, there's another way. I'm like, oh, there is, but.
I know. I heard that with like a few, you know, parents our age that are kind of the same issues. We're like, I don't know this math.
Yeah. Exactly. Math is math.
Even though I didn't go to school in the 2000s. The early 2000s.
We got you.
Yeah. Well, that step-by-step math is still really hard, and I don't seem to get the point of it.
Yeah. Your frontal lobe isn't fully developed yet. You'll figure it out. Don't worry.
Took me, yeah, I think it was 25 for men.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, so your brain will stop growing at 25.
Time, my friend.
Yeah, it, you go.
At least 25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I was a late bloomer. Mine could have been closer to 30. Maybe still working out. I don't know. I did some damage in there too, so.
We'll round up. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Oh, man. And then, so with Corral Hill, how close are you guys to, I'm trying to think of the Tarzan buck. What was the lookout that he built?
To Otter Butte.
Otter Butte, yeah.
So we can see Indian Hill from there.
Oh, really?
And then Otter Butte's just east of that.
Oh, gotcha.
So,
do you guys talk to John then when he's in there, John Crawford?
John's over on a tower on the Montana side now. But oh. I work. You know, I was there while John was there for a lot of years, and you know, even prior, that mountain hadn't had a major fire on it. You know. Besides that 1934 fire from the Tarzan book.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of that country had all pretty much grown back, and you wouldn't really know it. But then in 2003, there was a pretty big fire called Slim's Fire, and we had to evacuate John off of there, and that was quite a long project fire. And
was that the one that almost ate the tower? I saw a video of one getting really close to it.
That was 2015. It burned again.
Oh.
Reburned through all of that dead and down, and it cooked it pretty good. But yeah, there's little repairs that had to be done to the tower, but it made it.
Good. Yeah, because the one video you had a post or something, but yeah, it got really close. It's like
it cooked it pretty good. Yeah, that mountain looks way different than it did when I first started working for the Forest Service. But
I mean
it's beautiful in a lot of ways, but yeah, you see the succession of the trees coming back, and you know, lodgepole are, they're growing pretty good now. They're up out of the brush canopy, so it's,
oh, cool.
It'll start coming back to life again, you know. So there's hope, knowing that, you know, when I started working up there, you know, that's 65 years after the 1934 fire, and it was a well-established forest. So
yeah,
I know someone who will live to see it come back and look good again. So
yeah,
it's all part of the process, great. But
it is. It's good.
It's pretty cool up there, even, you know. When it first happened, it was pretty destructive looking, but each year it keeps looking better all the time. So I've actually really enjoyed hunting. You know, I hadn't hunted there really much at all until the last two seasons, and I've really enjoyed, you know, getting to know that country a little bit more and hanging out up there.
Yeah, that's what people don't realize, is it, you know, creates habitat for elk and, you know, all the deer and species like that, you know.
Yeah,
like,
there's a lot more signs of life there than there was when before the fires.
I know. Sure. I wish I could take people on a hike to an area like that before and after, or even just like after, and then take them over near like Butte, where there's so much dead and down, jackstraw, lodgepole, you know, and be like, there's nothing here, like nothing's living here, no animals, because you can't get through it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my fun memories was my rookie year there, and we were cutting brush, trying to get that road a little easier accessible up to the tower, and it was cold that morning. It was, you know, towards the end of August, and it was my last day of work before going to college, and Johnny calls us on the radio and says, "Hey, I got some huckleberry muffins up here for you guys when you're ready." And
on Indian Hill?
And some coffee, yeah. And you know, we're just a couple miles below the tower, and I'm like, man, that sounds really good. And we're loading up and taking our coats off and getting ready to get in the truck, and then patrol flies over, and there's a lightning strike right below the tower that John never saw the smoke on it. And, you know, look at that hillside now, and you know, the trail, like you could hardly find the trail going down the ridge there. And now when I'm elk hunting up there, you know, it's wide open and you can see, you know, 1,000 yards. And I remember walking down that trail the first time, and I was shaking my head this fall, and I was like, man, this is way different than it was 25 years ago.
But dude, I bet.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's wild too to hear like John's stories about the weather coming up so fast in that country. Like, I think it was on my podcast that he talked about how he was in the spirit world. He's close to death when he was like hiking back from Otter Butte that one time, and he just barely heard his wife's voice through like the fog. I was like, holy cow.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. We see some of those storms come across the prairie when they cross, you know, like Joseph Plains and coming out of Oregon there. And man, they come hard and they come fast. And even just Labor Day this last year, it rained overnight on us 2 inches there.
Jeez, man.
Yeah, his rain collector was empty. Then when we woke up in the morning, it was last day. We were packing up, and he checked the rain collector. It was like, I think it had filled over.
Oh, yeah, it was completely full, like slopping out of like the main canister, not just the skinny part that it funnels into.
It was really raining.
Mm-hmm.
It unloaded on us. I was glad we closed 5 out of the 8 shutters the night before it really started raining hard.
Smart.
Thank goodness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were all soaked by the end of it. We just got in the car. We're like, oh. So then, yeah, we were like, we need food. So we went to Ryan's Wilderness right after that.
So pants, and then we went to get like a milkshake and a burger at that restaurant across the river.
Do you have Ryan's Wilderness in?
At the Wildy.
Oh man.
And then we nudged our way home, and then it turned out fine.
Yeah, then it turned out fine.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how porous lookout is.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah,
no insulation.
You feel the breeze.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then when it gets hot. It's hot
really
in there.
Oh man, yeah.
It's not ever that bad, but there's usually a week or so when end of July, first part of August, where it's pretty miserable because there's no wind blowing or anything to help try to cool things off, and it's pretty hot then. But most of the time, it's just right.
Yeah.
It's funny though, because like, you know, in Moscow it'll be like, you know, 97 degrees, and then he'll take a picture of the temperature up at Corral Hill, and it'll be like 87. And the kids are like, it's so freaking hot. I'm like, it's 97 here. They're like, ah. But that 10-degree difference, they still are cooler than us. But then when they get down to, you know, the lowlands and it's like 95 degrees, they're like, I'm going to die. So, yeah. Altitude.
Yeah, totally. And then being up on top of the mountain, you have like you have more sun exposure, right? Mm-hmm. You see the sun earlier and the sun later. And that's what I noticed in Medicine Point. Like, we were freezing for a little while because at the end of the season, you know, the temperatures dropped right away, and the elk were bugling all night. It was amazing. But it got, like, super cold. But then, like, I don't know, 5:30 in the morning, even at the end of the year, you know, the sun was still coming up really early. It was still baking us, like, right away. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. We got, like, no sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it always feels like the morning, you know, up till 10 o'clock till the sun's above the shutters, then it doesn't seem that bad. But first thing in the morning, yeah, it heats it up pretty fast.
Yeah, we're just cooking.
Yeah, that sun comes up awfully early in the summertime.
Do you guys get the elk up there, like bugling in the fall there?
He had a couple tiny bucks last year that were checking him out. But
no, really?
Now the elk like to live. The elk are hiding from the wolves. They're right down in the town of Clearwater. We see the elk a lot when we're heading down for groceries or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I haven't heard an elk bugle up there and 4 years.
That's so wild.
A couple of years ago, we heard one lone wolf. We could tell it was young, but it just kept howling. We're like, okay, so there's a wolf somewhere. We never saw it. Did you ever see any sign of track when I wasn't there, Kevin?
Just those two by the spring.
Yeah.
Two jet black ones about the color of the dog.
The dog here. Oh, man. Jet black ones to me are like way more spooky. Like, there's one in a field in Twin Bridges. We were going to a training down in Dillon, and it's just south of Whitehall there. And early in the morning, all of us are just like in the gov rig, just kind of like, I think it's going to like hell attack or something, you know? Like, all right, heck, I'm training, you know? And my one friend's like, that's one big dog. And I'm like, look, I'm like, and he's pretty far away. I'm like, that's bigger than a dog. Like, that thing's way out there, you know? And it was a big black wolf. And it was just like, you know, like kind of almost like a day like this where it's like rainy, you know, kind of misting and just like this spooky big black animal in the middle of this field. Like, oh man, that's a scary animal.
Yeah, those eyes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got a couple resident white-tailed deer, and I planted some flowers. I might try again this year, but as soon as they start looking nice, then the deer come and them out. And
yeah.
You think you should plant them up on the top of the lookout so the deer can't get them?
If I had the planter boxes up top, they wouldn't bother them, but I have them down below. And
they'd
come get them.
There are also free-range cattle on Corral Hill, so he, like the snapdragons were popping and, like, the petunias were perfect, and he came home for, like, you know, pizza and a shower and, like, you know, change of clothes. And then when they got back, he's like, they were eating my flowers as soon as we drove up. So all the cows just take advantage as soon as he's gone. And
they're,
you know,
like waiting.
Yep.
Like, there
clean up cow pie duty. Yeah.
The worst job at the lookout is shoveling the cow dookie off the driveway. And I think you should buy a greenhouse for the flowers at the lookout so the deer can't get,
so
them,
can't
and
get them
and the cows. Yeah. But maybe some cows get angry wondering where the flowers are.
We try to keep them out of our bubble. They logged that probably 25 years ago, so we've got, you know, that's why our huckleberries are so good, is got nice easy exposure for the sun, and but the downside is, and the cows want to come out there and graze too, but they all have bells, so you can kind of know where they're at, and the kids kind of got them trained where they tend to kind of just hover right around our clearing, and that's great, but it's like they know as soon as we leave, man, they're up there, and they make themselves at home while we're gone.
Yeah, like me, Millie, and Kalia grab sticks and like we hide, bang on a tree, and then go hide behind another tree, and then they get scared, and then thinking it's probably like a wolf or something, and then like we start running towards them, and then they start running away down the hill,
spooking them off. Yeah,
it's just fun.
Oh, it's fun, man. Yeah, not too many kids are getting that experience. That's so cool. What a great way to grow up and to live, man.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome. And Corral, was it just the one that was open? Is that how you ended up there?
Yeah, I talked to, you know, guys at Moose Creek because I wanted to stay there. I didn't want to really work anywhere else. Well, the original job offer that I had was at Waldy Lookout, which is on the north side of the Locksaw, not too far from the Locksaw-Selway confluence there. And,
oh, yeah.
Well, then I'd be working for the Locksaw district instead, and I was like, well, until something comes up. And anyway, so I accepted that job. Well, like almost right after I sent the email saying, hey, I'll take this job, then the guy from Moose Creek called and said, hey, well, we're looking at least one opening, maybe two. Like, well, okay, well then that's easy. So I emailed the other person back and said, nope, sorry, I'm going back to Fan. And it was supposed to be Indian Hill originally. Well, it had been kind of left vacant, and it was a little in disrepair after that fire. They hadn't had anyone up there. And so the summer started off being kind of a recon, like, okay, well, what needs to be fixed up there? And anyway, between the resident mice and a few other issues up there, and how much work it was going to take even to get it livable for an adult. And I had my kids with me too. My boss, like, well,
lead base paint.
Yeah. Turns out Corral Hill's open. So you want that? And I was like, yeah, that probably is a better fit at that time.
A little more moving ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was ready just to get up there and get going. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. There's a huge upside to Indian Hill for a lot of reasons, but yeah, it's a little harder because you can't drive to it. You got to have a four wheeler, and Corral Hill is kind of nice because it's a little closer to town. Especially, he was playing T-ball last year, and you know, running him to games and stuff like that. So
yeah, that's a good deal, man.
Yeah, it
a little more better work life balance.
Yeah, it gets you out there, but I can still get my kids to all the things that they got going on too. So.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, down the road, you guys find some more remote if you want it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Best of both worlds.
Yeah, plus if anything bad happens, like, Grangeville is just, like, you know, a stone's throw away. Well, really long stone's throw, but you can see it. So it's like, if anything bad happens, we can just take them down there.
Yeah, totally.
You could see it perfectly, and, like, it's like maybe, is it like half an hour drive to Grangeville? No, hour drive?
It's a little closer to an hour, probably.
Like, 40-minute drive down. If there's an emergency, it's fine.
Yeah, not too bad.
Yep. That and life flight's a good combination.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and it gets real bad. I think Two Bear Air, I'll come all the way out there if you guys need it. And that's always in my back pocket. I'm always thinking about Two Bear Air, you know, because they're so capable.
Those guys do good work, that's for sure.
Man, yeah, amazing.
Yeah. Well, best birthday present my parents have been getting me for the last 20 years is a Life Flight membership.
So, really? Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. Paired.
One of those things that be glad to never have to use, but we got it. And our Garmin with the SOS link, so the InReach.
The InReach, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's huge, man. I know, I gotta get a little smarter with that kind of stuff, you know, because I go to a lot of spots where, you know, it's like there's no cell phone service and only, you know, one or two people know where I am.
Yeah, my uncle that lives here in Stevensville, he had his last year when we went to Paradise and was showing me and
yeah, he just looked at me and I was like, get it.
My wife encouragingly nod said, mm-hmm. Yeah, you really do need that for what you want to do.
So. Yeah. Did you guys get like the little keychain one?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so convenient now. Remember, they used to be kind of big, so it was kind of a pain. And now it's like this nice little keychain.
They're pretty easy to use and just nice to have a check-in.
Yeah. He found a way to have it go to his phone so he could like text me like, you know, like, how was your day? What you doing at the coffee shop? But then the bill was like $150. So now he has to keep it like down to like, here I am. Good morning. I love you. Goodbye. Oh, like, we can't text. Like, we were, but then it was, you know.
Oh, you don't have any service up there, hey?
Yeah.
Well, that was during hunting season. Yeah. We got full service there at Corral Hill.
Oh, nice.
Yep. Friday nights are movie nights for the kids. But with the Grauman, he just found a way to, like, text, like, regular, not just, like, you know, the built-in things. And he's like, yeah, I don't think I can do that anymore. That was really expensive. But it is possible.
Like the old collect phone calls. Mm-hmm. Where
yeah, exactly. Yeah. 99 cents every minute.
Yeah.
That's what that overtime in the summer is for, I guess.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Oh, man.
The rain and stuff. Yeah, it happens.
Here we go. Man. Yeah, I couldn't hear it at first because of the headphones. I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, got some good ears.
Mm-hmm.
Man, well, I won't keep you guys too long. I mean, how long do you think we've been sitting here?
I'd say about an hour and a half. That's my guess.
What do you think?
It feels shorter than that, but
time flies. What do you think, Lachlan?
Well, this is kind of fun, like talking for like an hour and a half.
Yeah. Sharing some stories.
It's almost 1:30. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
About time for second lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Get some snacks. You guys got any supplies you gotta pick up before you head up?
Bread. We need
just
bread.
Just a loaf of bread.
Nice. Well, are you guys doing the sourdough thing up at Corral Hill? Like,
no, I
smoke chaser
I,
was it?
I should, yeah. Yeah, I should. That book, I've read that at least twice now. Just man. Cool stories.
What a great book!
Yeah.
Oh man.
To have been out there to see that country,
dude.
Then because, you know, I've been there a few times, but you know not that would have been of it? That would yeah. There's really not much. Ate an apple from one of the old really? Apple trees that was still alive there the last time I was there.
Man. It was a really bungalow, cool. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Yeah, what a... Well, just the CCC camps that were around this country and the things that they were able to accomplish was pretty awesome. And, you know, that's what's cool about going over to Paradise and seeing, you know, the bridges that they built and that road was constructed by the CCC and, you know, Fenn Ranger Station on the Selway and just so many things that, and
yeah, the bridge there. Yeah.
Lots of lookouts and we could bring that back. There's a few young men that would benefit greatly from
100%.
Doing that again.
Yeah. It's just like a cool life experience to share. I mean, MCC is close, but it's not, you know, CCC is a little bit more, I don't know, like, well-rounded, it's more of a commitment, I guess, but it seems like more fun, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with really some kids getting that military-based discipline. For some kids that really need it would be a good thing.
Yeah, totally, man. Get some good structure early on. I mean, I think everyone almost would benefit from that. I know I would have. Just like some good, well, I mean, Boy Scouts and like a few other sports and stuff helped me get that. And my dad, you know, is pretty good structured-wise that way, you know, but I think, you know, having something that you're like a part of a team too, you know, like that's, you hear a lot of people talk about like hot shots and crews. It's like you're part of the team. Each person has their own task they have to do. And if that doesn't happen, the whole team, you know, is going to hurt. So
you're,
it's like,
you're only as good as everybody on your crew. So everyone's got to step up and do their job.
Yeah.
There's, so. I think it was it Outdoor Idaho? There was, I think it might've been on PBS for sure, but they were describing how the CCC like sold itself. It's like, would you like to become a man? Would you like 3 full meals a day? And like, you know, it was close or in the Great Depression, like, you know, when food was scarce. And so like, come work for the CCC. And like, you know, it shows like the guys like having fun and eating food. And I like how they put a positive spin on like, you know, helping out.
Yeah, totally. And there was actually a gal from Job Corps I worked with last summer who was volunteering to, well, she wasn't volunteering. She would just come over with the Job Corps to help do some fence here at one of the campgrounds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a few of the kids were kind of complaining. And I was like, and I was an instructor there for a little while one winter. And I was like, you know, and I'm all about the Job Corps. And I'm like, wait a minute. You don't have to pay for anything, right? You know, and I know all this stuff, but I'm just asking them like rhetorical question, like, so you don't have to pay for anything. You get a free bed, you get a free room and board, you get, you know, food. And this one gal's like, yeah, it's nice to have three meals, you know, typically three hot meals. Mm-hmm. And I was like, bingo, you know, I was like, what are you complaining about? And you get a trade, like,
yeah, and you get taught a skill that you can use later.
Yeah, exactly. Like, mm-hmm. man, you're gonna make more money than a lot of the people I know going to college, you know, learning to be a welder or a carpenter or a plumber, any one of those things, you know, like, mm-hmm. they have masonry, and it's like, man, like, you're getting a skill, and you're not having to pay a dime, you're going no debt, and you get a nice place to stay, you know, and support, and they give you money when you leave. You graduate, you get, like, I don't know, like $5,000 or more, I think, to, like, help get you on your feet when you leave.
That's awesome.
We need more of that, for sure.
Yeah, totally, man. I mean, what a benefit.
Yeah, like, they're at Fenn. At the ranger station there, you know, once upon a time when that was a Job Corps CCC site, like, there's a basketball gymnasium there. Like, it's not there really? Now. It would have been super cool if that was still there when I was working fire crew. We'd go somewhere to shoot hoops. We had outdoor hoops and stuff, but that would have been super cool to still have the gym and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, we're at the Job Corps here. You know, you guys will drive past it today, like, mm-hmm. as you guys know it, but, like, it, you know, that gym's open all the time. Like, yeah. I would just go in there, you know, like, after work, sometimes we said shoot hoops and get there early and lift weights. They got a really nice gym. Like, it's, and the students have access to it pretty much all the time when they're not in, like, class or, you know, doing something. It's like, man, that's huge.
Yeah.
Like, some of these kids, they don't know what they got.
Yeah, such a good deal.
Yeah, and a lot of them, and that's sometimes a frustrating thing is, like, a lot of them are coming from some broken homes and some bad situations, and then they get almost, like, a little spoiled and forget about it. Like, wait a minute, man, like, you got a good thing going here, you know?
Yeah, you got a really good thing going.
Yeah, and some of them, like, the other thing was either, like, some prison time or, you know, something else really bad, you know, like, was their other option, you know? Yeah,
A or B. Here's a chance to turn it around or...
Yeah.
Or the alternative, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Like, man, yeah, I can't remember what they call it, but, like, you know, being institutionalized, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's horrible, man. But, oh, shoot. Oh, I was going to ask you about the... Was the CCC camp over by Bungalow, you know, that he's talking about? Have you seen it? Is there anything, like, left of it?
There's not a whole lot left there anymore, if I'm remembering right. I don't think any of the buildings are there.
Oh, really?
At all. And, you know, even in that, the book, he's talking about how, you know, things were kind of on the decline even.
There's, like, even, a pool table left. And
yeah. Yep. It's,
he said, like, the pool sticks, the pool cues have been liberated.
Yeah, and you know, it's, my dad worked for the Forest Service his whole career too, and, you know, and it's quite a ways farther up the river, but, you know, it's closer to the Montana side, but there's an area called the Cedars, and that was run by Diamond Matchstick Company. Like, they had a little town essentially out there just cutting white pine to make matchsticks with.
Whoa.
And there's still you know, camper pad spots. Like, if you know where to look, you can still see evidence of, you know, where things were. And yeah, my dad said when he first started working for the Forest Service, they had a little gas station there, and you'd go in there and get an ice cream cone and,
whoa,
you know, a little convenience store. But, you know, if you were just casually driving through there, you would never know any of that stuff. But he showed that to me when we were out there hunting a couple years ago.
That's so cool. So, and there's nothing left of Bungalow either, huh?
No.
Dang, man. Yeah. It's a shame for those places to kind of go away. Like, I was in northern Arkansas on a Region 8 burn module with the jumpers one time. And it's cool. Like, down there, they're a little more low speed, which I think is awesome. Because, like, one of the guys I was working with, he was, like, wanting to, you know, earn our keep. So we're out there, even in the rain, you know, dropping these big, heavy, you know, hardwoods. And it's, you know, it's a lot of work. And then some of those things are hollow, and they just, like, puke this nasty stuff on you when you cut into them. And
yeah.
Oh, the smell. Yeah, it sticks with you. Man, the story of this gal who was getting her bee, and she was just tough as nails and just kind of a little thing. And she was, you know, born into one of them, and it just, like, was full of this, like, yucky, you know, like, stagnant water that, yuck is, like, the best word I can think of, I guess. Like, just
sounds like our grand fur around here every once in a while that get
hollowed out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it just poured all over, and she just smelled horrible. But she kept going like nothing happened, got her bees hurt, and never really said much about it. But, man, it...
What a woman.
Brutal. Yeah, tough. Yeah. And I got a little taste of that, and I was like, I don't know how she did it, man. Like, it would make you gag. It was so strong, you know, and... Mm-hmm. So we're like doing that, and the guy's like, "Why don't you guys go check out this barbecue place? You guys need to go to this, I think it's Ozark store in the Ozarks, and it's like just this little convenience store. It's like nothing else around, but there's enough people in town to keep it going. It's a cafe too, and mm-hmm. like it's the best pie you'll ever have." So finally, they made us go one day on like our last day, and it was so cool. And then they were trying to shake us down for some stickers, and like we weren't prepared. And we're like, we didn't. So I think we peeled off some jumper stickers off the rig or something to give to them. Nice. But we're like, man, and but it was so cool, you know, and just kind of like that slower pace. Like I think the Foresters used to be, you know, they talk about a little bit in Smoke Chaser, where it's like, go bust your hump and then like come back to like a nice meal and kind of take a little break and then get back out and bust your hump. You know, like there was a little mm-hmm. bit better balance, I think. And,
well, and just how the family aspect of it too back then, you know, like they wanted, you know, they wanted the guys to be able to have their family out there, you know, and have everything that, you know, they would need to make a better worker and a, you know, happier employee, I think, and kind of got away from that in some aspects of the job.
Totally. Yeah. I've been talking about that a lot lately, not as much on the podcast really, but just with folks around, because like the housing is an issue, all these issues that, you know, like we're always a concern, but they'd take care of it back in the day. Like people were never getting rich being in the Forest Service, but they would make it worth it because they'd have housing for you and your family was welcome. And it was like, even the book that our book club this week was at Last Man on Red Mountain. Mm-hmm. He talks about that in the beginning, right? It's like it was a community, but you felt like you were part of this family and this community at the Ranger District. And like you said, it's no one sticks around anymore. You know, it's a place to show up to work and then people are out. You know, there's a few people in the bunkhouse anymore, but it's not like, we used to have like Thanksgiving dinners and stuff at our, you know, mm-hmm. Ranger Districts, and people come out and especially if no one had nowhere to go, you know, a lot of people come from like back east or whatever. So they'd have a big meal, you know, big potluck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. People who weren't from there, you'd invited them over and,
yeah,
you know, and like when I was on fire crew, you know, we hung out a lot, whether it was at the station or, you know, my family had a cabin just down the road at Lowell and we'd go swimming, you know, yeah. If nothing was going on, we were hanging out and more community and, you know, maybe we're just getting old, but yeah, everyone's out, you know, they playing video games in the basement of the bunkhouse and no one wants to go out and go fishing and
not talking to each other.
Yeah, yeah. It's not what it used to be. It used to be a lot of fun. You know, work was fun, but after work was a lot of fun too.
Yeah, you can be looking forward to it after. Like during the day, you'd be busting hump, you'd be like making plans. Like, and yeah. And for us in Whitehall, it was typically the fire, or just on the Beaverhead Deer Lodge National Forest in general, it was usually the fire folks who were like leading the activity, but everybody was invited. So it wasn't just fire folks showing up. It was like from other programs, you know, whether it's Ranger, you know, like trails or timber, whatever, you know, it's like, we're going to go float the river. This is like a forest event, you know, big, send out the word.
Well, yeah, and we used to play, you know, the Locksaw crew and softball, you know, and they'd tell everybody at Muscle Shell, like Hell Attack, everybody, you know, hey, we're meeting at Kooski, you know, we'd go down there and we'd be playing softball till dark at the city park, you know, if nothing was going on, we were out doing stuff like that. And I don't think that's happening much anymore.
It doesn't seem like it, huh?
There were some hot shots that were parked down. They kept coming to the base of Corral Hill last year for about a week. And we'd walk down and go say hi to them when I was visiting up there. Like, I guess they did it every day, but I did it for 2 or 3 days. And, like, our old late dog, Ruger, he would go down and, like, play with the guys. And I was talking to one of the kids on the Hotshot crew, and they're like, you don't know how nice it is, how at the end of a day, like, you know, just to see a dog running up to you. And he had, like, a little American flag, like, you know, dog tag. And he's like, it just feels so much better knowing that at the end of the day, there's a dog waiting for me. Yeah. They left eventually, but were they from California, that crew?
That was Idaho City Shots.
Oh, that was Idaho City. Really? Yeah. But yeah, those...
There was Californians coming up to way too early trying to steal our huckleberries from Illinois. Yeah. We had to wake up at like 5:30 to pick them.
Yeah.
Every day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and even when I first got in the Forest Service, my first role ever was to Silver City. I think it was in 2009. Like, cause in 2008, with guard school and stuff, that was my actual first season in 2008. And it was just guard school lasts so long, and then not much was going on. And then we weren't sending people off forest at that point or something. I don't know. I just didn't leave the forest my first year. And then the second year, got to be on an engine roll and got down to Silver, and Silver was going off pretty good. And there's all these resources from everywhere down there, and you know, Silver City Hotshot Crew was down there, and mm-hmm. I think maybe they were leaving it, but like every day there was like softball either for PT or afterwards there'd be like, hey, come play softball, and they throw teams together, and like you said, it was either like if there's another crew visiting, it was like them versus Silver City Hotshots and you know, Hell Attack or Smoke Jumpers, whatever, but you know, because there's a Smoke Jumper spike base there too, so it was like all these fire people from all over the nation getting there, you know, at least from the Northwest. And probably all over the nation, I guess, because Cherokee Shots or somebody might have been there. And it's like, man.
What a community.
So cool. Yeah, what a community. What, yeah. what a good hang. And then also a good way to network. You're like, man, like, you know, maybe you're working with Medewin or something from Illinois. And you're like, man, I like these guys, man. I'd like to go spend some time with them. Mm-hmm. You know, because they get to do some cool burning up in, like, Minnesota and Michigan and stuff that, like, we never get to do.
It's how you get the winter gigs or the off-season, you know.
Yeah.
Get out and go travel. Yeah, I know a lot of guys go to Mississippi or Florida and get those other chances to go help them out and do burning. And you know, when we're buried in snow here, you might as well go over there and get some work in.
Yeah, totally. Like that was one of the really big benefits for me for jumping was like, you know, I didn't have to like hustle as much in the fire season because I knew Region 8 was going to be around, because you know, the jumpers usually have that big connection there, and send someone down to Atlanta to kind of help with the hub there, and you get on a jumper mod. And so, and a lot of times like guys would just like, you know, anchor up down in somewhere in the South and hang out and like, you know, be, you know, R&R in place and just get on with the next mod and just keep rolling, like go back to back. And it's a good moneymaker. You don't feel like you have to hustle so hard when fire season comes, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. When you got, you know, so many hours already in your pocket before, then yeah, you don't feel the pressure that, oh, we got to get this many fires and I got to have this many hours of overtime to, make the money I need. So.
Yeah, totally. Because I think a lot of people like comfortable. It's like 500 hours of overtime. Usually, a lot of people at least are trying to get to. And then you know, you get the other guys who are like hot shots are trying to hit 1,000. But 1,000 hurts, man. You do too many of those, and that really wears on you.
And my buddy Bob that works still there at Finn, he hit 1,000 either last year or the year before, and he's like, I need a break, man. Oh, that's man. Too much.
It is too much, man. I think I hit 1,000 once or twice, and then just been in the ballpark a few times, and oh man, I feel like I need like a month just to like recover, you know, like get away from it for a minute and just like take a week to sleep, you know, and then slowly get back in alive again.
Yeah. I always, with teaching or going back to college, I only once worked into September, and if I made it to 300, you know, from 1st of June to mid to towards the end of August, that was a okay summer for me. 300 was kind of what I always aimed for, but
yeah, that's good.
September's a moneymaker I always missed out on because I had to go to my lower paying job. So
August and September is usually like when you get really bank those hours, because June's not much going on. July usually doesn't get going until the end of the July, you know, and then you know, August and September is like you said, where it really comes in. Then you kind of get some trickle in October if you're on a district or something.
But if you're still on, October can still be pretty good too. So
yeah, totally.
We've been watching the snowpack and like how it's slowly going, you know, so fast. Kevin's like, I think it's going to be a lot of overtime this year. I hope you're okay with it. I'm like, you go and make your money. Yeah, no, it's going to be intense, but yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like we've been talking for like a million years now. It's been like 2 hours.
I know. I got an hour 18 on the old timer here, and I'm about to wrap it up so you guys can get on the road and hopefully make it to paradise before it gets dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But appreciate you guys coming out. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Good to meet you. Finally.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Yeah, good to meet you guys.
Good to meet you.
Yeah, we'll do it again.
Thank you for letting us come here.
Yeah, thanks for joining.
Say it in there so everyone can hear.
Oh, this was fun. Bye.
Thanks, I appreciate you.
Thanks. Our dog might just stay here. I don't know.
Yeah, you want to come home with me? I got two friends for you.
Yeah, it's fun yelling Fen Ranger when he's being bad, because you know.
It kind of rolls off the tongue nicely.
It really, really does.
Yeah. Thanks again, guys, and thanks for everybody who's listening.
Yay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.